welcome to episode 18 of the Broker Collective podcast. The podcast for brokers by brokers slash IFAs. My name's Riz Malik, and joining me as ever are Lewis Trawlerman-Shaw.
Hello, hello. I'll do it. How are we getting on? What's happening?
And Jamie Demora Lennox.
Yo, yo, yo.
Welcome, guys. We've had a little bit of a break, but the Dream Team is back now, and do we have a lot to discuss today. Let's start off and kick things off with the market. And you cannot start a conversation about the market without talking about the Bank of England base rate decision. And yesterday we were informed that the base rate is going to be held at 0.25%. Was this a surprise to anybody? Sorry, I've got this light in my face and it's really pissing me off, so let me switch it off. Was this a surprise to anybody? Lewis?
I thought they'd cut. I genuinely was thinking they might cut. I was thinking they'll go quarter of a percent and just take a little bit out of it. It felt as though kind of lenders with swaps, where they were with lenders pricing where they've been, just felt like they were kind of preempting that as well. But maybe, well, obviously not. But yeah, I thought they'd cut, because I think we need to. I think the economy needs to.
Jamie?
Yeah, I think obviously the data didn't support it. Market expectations didn't support it. But when you saw the Fed go 0.5%, you thought, there's a slim chance this could happen. And I, you know, obviously we do social media for lots of brokers, and I was thinking maybe I need to do a post just in case they do cut to reflect this on there as well. So I was kind of quietly hoping on the outside. What I didn't, you know, deep down I probably knew it was going to hold, but I didn't think it'd still be quite as strong as a hold as what they voted at, with obviously 8 in favor of the hold and only 1 think for a cut. So I think that sends quite a clear message. Few of them are quite a way off probably being ready for further cuts to come in. So we're probably going to need some solid data in the next 6 weeks to open up November as a cut, to be fair now.
Well, just as we have come on, well, later on this morning, HSBC has updated its forecast on what the Bank of England is going to do in the future. Now, expectations were, before the cut, that there is going to be another one in November and another one in December, because there's no meeting in October. But what do we have coming up in October? We have got the Halloween budget, which is going to really shape things, in my opinion, and shape things to come. Now, HSBC have said that they see only one more cut this year in November, but they see one per meeting in 2025, leaving the base rate at 2.75%, which they see is neutral. Now, with that factored in, the market's already pricing rates ending 2024 at 3.5%. So they're saying 25 bips coming off. There's no meeting in January. We've got Feb, March, May, June, August, September, November, and December. If we actually head toward and follow that trajectory and finish where they think that we may do, how do you think that's going to impact the UK property market /front/back/ mortgage market? Trawlerman?
Well, I think we'll see. I think we'll see prices starting to go again. I think, was it Savills that brought, they have, Savills always do their kind of projection, don't they, with house prices. And I think they were saying something like 5% up by the end of, maybe the end of this year, was it this year? And generally, if you look over the kind of the past Savills house price predictions, when you look at what they predict to what happens, they're generally on the conservative side, normally. Now, obviously, past performance, future performance, all that kind of jazz, but they tend to be a little bit below what actually happens. So I wouldn't be surprised if that happens in terms of the base rate coming down at that margin. We start to see prices start pumping, because to be fair, there's been a lot of deferred transactions, haven't they? there'll be a lot of deferred transactions that come forward. That coupled with potentially the stamp duty changes for first-time buyers, I think we could see house prices start to accelerate again in 2025 and into 2026, which for those people sad enough to read economic stuff and all that kind of jazz.
Like me and John Chong, you mean?
Yeah. Jamie are obviously far too cool for that. But
yeah.
You've got Fred Harrison, haven't you, in the 18-year property cycle, where he talks about an acceleration into another crash, which if he's to be believed, comes at the kind of a peak of house prices in 2026, according to him. And if we get those kind of cuts throughout 2025, and then you could kind of see, well, maybe this guy's onto something, you know? So that's a bit worrying, I guess.
Jamie, if we look at the markets at the moment, we're seeing gilts slightly touch higher, but Sonia swapped seem to be slightly the other way. What's your expectation of mortgage pricing between now, the Halloween budget, and when we all start singing Jingle Bells, Jingle Bells?
I think it's probably become less about market activity, as in what's happening with swap rates and what's happening with gilts. I think it's been another year like last year where there'll still be lenders chasing their tail to the 11th hour, trying to get that numbers across the line for their year end. And I imagine there will be some lenders that will happily take a loss on a tranche of money to lend it to appease shareholders that they've hit X amount of lending in that year as well. So I think there may be some still aggressive pricing personally as they keep chasing. And ultimately the outlook, you know, although the base rate may not be coming down, if there is only one more cut and it's 0.25% this year, you know, people were hoping for a 0.5. Well, it sounds like if it's not going to happen this year, it's going to accelerate next year. It sounds inevitable it's going to be coming down anyway. So you may just find is that lenders at the end of it, even if they take it as a loss leader for the 2 years that probably most people are doing at the moment in time, let's be honest, they may just get aggressive. You know, they may want to market that client very well in that 2 years of having them. Can, you know, if we take a hit on the mortgage, can we cross sell their protection? Can we cross sell the home insurance, the bank accounts, the credit cards, the personal loans? Can we keep them as a client after that 2 years period as well? So I think there's going to be a lost leading period, maybe for some banks, but then ultimately they're looking at the bigger picture. And if I get you as a client now, we know the hassle of switching lenders once rates are rosy and rates are then cheaper in 2 years time. If you log in and see, actually, you were on a 4% deal now or 4.5% now, and then you can get a 3% deal in 2 years time, you're probably not going to shop about. You're just going to click the button and go, actually, it's cheaper than what I've got. And they then tied you in for another few years as well. So I think there'll be some smart business play going on from here on out, and it'll be less about the swaps.
So I was speaking to an estate agent who I saw at a coffee shop, and I asked him how things were going. And he told me that sub 600,000 property price in this area in the southeast, stuff was still moving and the market was quite active. But he was saying over £1 million, stuff has been sitting on the market, hasn't really moved. And there's even been some properties that have been on for well over a year, in some cases over 2 years. I also spoke to another partner of a firm that does a lot of purchase transactions in the new build sector, and she was telling me that they have continued to be busy over the whole period because from our side in our business, we've started to see more of an uptick of inquiries since the kids have gone back to school. What are you guys seeing in your businesses at the moment?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, I'm seeing new pens. So just marketing that there, so pens.com. I've had a busy month this month. It's been a very busy month, actually. And to be fair, in the area that I predominantly operate in, which is Mansfield, Ashfield, Chesterfield, so kind of North Nottinghamshire, you know, North Derbyshire, property prices for you know, they're still obviously, you know, outside of where kind of wages are, you know, the outstripped wages, but still, they're still relatively affordable in comparison to, for example, parts of the country, like, you know, London and the South East. So it's still been pretty busy. Buyers are still buying, sellers are still selling, and it's healthy where it is at the moment. yeah, most people would want a percent or, you know, 1.5% off the mortgage, is understandably, because who doesn't want a cheaper mortgage, right? You know, but yeah, everything's fine here. I think for the higher value stuff, though, of course, if you're taking out a big old mortgage, if you're borrowing, you know, 150k, and the rate is 4 or 3.75 or 4.25, it doesn't have a massive impact. It obviously makes a difference, but not a massive impact. But if you borrow 600,000-700,000 quid, a percent difference or a 0.5% difference on the interest rate over, you know, kind of 20-25 years is massive, isn't it? So I'm not surprised that the higher end has kind of, you know, had the brakes put on it at all, to be fair. Presumably that's what you're seeing, Jamie, anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd echo the buying habits of buyers has changed. You'd get your first time buyer around here probably quite comfortably go over 300k pre this all kicking off, whereas most rein in probably sub 250, so you're taking 50-60-70k off the purchase price, which I think I mentioned before, in the long run it will add extra tiers of moving, whereas you could sometimes, you know, we were quite fortunate, we bought our first property, made good money on it, and pretty much moved into our next property and we could stay here forever. Whereas now the next generation will be like, they'll get a starter home, 2-bed, the terraced. They'll maybe get up to a 3-bed semi, and then maybe then get up to the 4-bed on there if they want to do so as well. So I think there'll be extra tiers of moving, which obviously helps the industry as a whole, but ultimately more costs involved for the actual clients as well. But yeah, I think we kind of need to get the upper market moving at some point, because that's creating still and that keeps the first time buyers it keeps that market quite buoyant, because house prices aren't really dropping down too much in that space, I don't think, because of there's less people selling them properties because they can't afford the properties higher up in the scale as well. You need the whole thing working in, you know, fluidly to really have a property market that's buoyant.
So if we now shimmy into the budget that is coming up on the 30th of October, my question to you is that there are a lot of things that are going to come out, and the closer we get to the budget, there'll be more leaks in terms of what potentially could happen. If we're on this low interest rate or decreasing interest rate trajectory, what do you think could really come out on the 30th of October that could slam the door on the progress that we've been making? Lewis?
I don't think we're going to see anything that slams the door. I think if that's, no. I think if that's where they think the trajectory of interest rates are going to go, and of course that influences the cost of government debt and government borrowing, doesn't it? So I think what they might do is play a very, very kind of very, very safe budget in terms of, you know, we're going to tinker here, tinker there, and nothing major, with a view to we'll see how we get on in 12 months. And then when interest rates are cheaper, there's going to be more headroom for government borrowing. Government debt costs are going to come down. I think that's when we'll see. That's when they'll do stuff. Because that would make sense, right? You know, if you're running a business, you're thinking, well, okay, interest rates are going to be cheaper in 12 months. I'll wait to do that investment in 12 months' time when I can get the borrowing at half the cost.
Jamie, what do you think the people of Norwich, the good, hardworking folk of Norwich, are expecting from the budget?
Not a lot, from the sounds of it. But I will touch on that HSBC must have some concerns what's going to come out from this budget, because it was only a couple of months ago where most expectations was base 3.5, maybe down to 3, 3.25. So if their expectations shifted to 2.5% at the end goal, is there economic pain coming, and the reason it needs to go that down to that level as well? Because, you know, from the Bank of England, they've previously come out and said their goal is to maintain around that kind of 3, 3.5% is their long-term goal. So if we're going below that, are they potentially causing some pain along the way? So I'm a little bit concerned what can happen. And I think the issue will be is the squeeze on businesses. That's, you know, it's the extra changes to corporation tax or dividend tax on there as well. And I think there's going to be some form of pain. The extent of it, who knows at this point, though.
Although, if you remember, so there's a great little chart floating around on Twitter, or X as it is now, that shows the implied path of interest rates from, I think it's from October, no, October or November 2007. where the Bank of England were kind of forecasting interest rates. This is prior to obviously the financial crash, and they were still kind of up at fives going into kind of 2008 and 2009. Of course, we know it fell off a cliff. So I'm not sure that the Bank of England is I think most people generally consider that they tend to be behind the curve. They were behind the curve in getting on top of inflation. They'll probably be behind the curve when it comes to reducing and maybe cause a bit more damage. And of course, if the US economy has trouble, then that's going to give everyone some trouble, isn't it? You know?
Lewis, Jamie.
Riz.
I'm here for one reason and one reason alone. I'm here to guess what the music might do in a week, a month, a year from now. That's it. Nothing more. And I'm standing here tonight. I'm afraid that I don't hear a thing. Just silence.
So, deep. Now that you know the music has stopped, what are we going to do about it?
I think that deserved a round of applause.
Very good. Very good. Business quote there from Margin Call.
The greatest movie of all time, Margin Call, in my opinion. One of the most underappreciated films around.
I'm gonna watch.
Okay, fine. So, look, we're not sure what's going to happen. Things might have a little bit of a wobble. We're going into this budget. I'm concerned because usually when somebody delivers a budget or any political party that has got an ounce of sense will tell people this is where you're going to feel the pain, but this is where you're going to feel the pleasure. Not this is all where you're going to be feeling the pain. And this is the mistake that I think that the current party have made. There, a lot of people saying is, are Labour managing the economy correctly at the moment? And okay, they've just come in now. And they're still getting their feet under the table. The first thing they found was this £22 billion black hole, which when the Financial Times asked the Treasury for more information, it was very slow in coming forth, if it has still even given them that information. And now we're told that this budget is going to be delivering some very harsh messages. I'm just concerned about what the message that is sending out to the country as a whole, because the one thing that you need in any form of economic recovery is people to have confidence that things are going to get better. And if your government of the day keeps on telling you or giving you the impression that things aren't going to get better, that negates the benefit of a declining interest rate. And I just haven't got a clue what on earth is going on at the moment. And I'm just a bit concerned.
You look concerned, Riz.
I just feel concerned.
I thought you might have been constipated, but clearly it's concern.
It's concern, it's not constipation. I have no problems with my bowel movements. Thank you very much.
No.
Let's move on to another topic. And along with mortgage rates coming down is the situation that we find ourselves in, that once you submit an application to a lender prior to completion, there could be a number of occasions when the product reprices downwards. Now, for a lot of brokers, that involves us contacting the lender and asking for the lender to reoffer on the lower product. But there are implications with that, and that's not automatically guaranteed. In addition, some solicitors and some conveyancing firms have now stipulated that they will charge if they are reviewing an offer because a rate has gone down due to the extra work that they have to do and then having to communicate with the actual client. Jamie, what are your thoughts on this topic?
One sense you think from business is like, it is more work. So, you know, does it warrant a further charge? Whether you just charge more in the first place would probably be a better starting point than being something a little bit feels a little bit underhand each time. Well, how much of that work is actually involved of, you know, a report, which is pre-templated anyway, because I've seen a lot of these reports to clients where they've put wrong information in because they copied and pasted it from someone else's report to then just update the rate and the end date of that product on there as well. You know, they're probably billing them for a full hour of work, which is probably what five minutes work for them as well. So that's where it feels feels a bit spicy, a bit underhand.
I would add that these are Jamie's views and not the views of the Broker Collective. Calls are recorded for training and quality purposes. Yeah. All views are our own. Please continue defaming lawyers, Jamie.
Yeah, thank you for letting me get sued. So, yeah, I just think it's... Yeah, I'm not a fan, but then I've got more of a moral compass. My, you know, I make no more for doing rate switches for customers that have already got a deal offered. It's more admin, but I know it's doing the right thing for the customer, which in longevity... I'll get rewarded for it because they'll recommend me to more clients, and then I've got a client for life at the end of the day as well. So I think it's short-sighted in essence, but then yeah, it's a tricky one. It's a tricky one because business is business, but people are people. So it's what camp do you want to be in? Thankfully, I only work with firms that don't charge for the extra work in there. But obviously sometimes client has their way and they pick who they pick.
Business is business and people are people.
Yeah,
true. I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if lenders start, if we do go into a pretty rate cutting environment next year, I wouldn't be surprised if lenders put the block on this in terms of once it's offered, it's offered. If you want to start again, you start again. I wouldn't, because they're going to be having to try and rehedge all those kind of funds and all the rest of it. So I wouldn't be surprised if they put the block on it. There are even now lenders, aren't there, where, so there's a couple of lenders that won't let you. Once it's offered, that's it. You've got the deal. And I know there are lenders now that are saying, that tend to be more specialist, but if you want to change the deal, then there's a fee for doing that, isn't it? It's like 99 quid, yeah, or 149 or whatever it might be. I wouldn't be surprised if they put a stop to that. I genuinely wouldn't.
I actually commented recently and I said, look, at the moment, with falling interest rates, one of the questions you should be asking, and Lewis, you said this, especially in the specialist marketplace, that if I do get offered and the rates do go down, what's the process? Now, look, a lender can change their process at any moment in time, but if there's a small difference between two products and one lender would happily reoffer, whereas the other one would want a brand new application and had a few months before that deal was set to conclude, I know which one I'd rather be choosing. So this is, again, the advantage of not just looking at interest rate and fees and all of those types of things, but living and breathing a market as well.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I heard a story the other day where a customer had complained about a remortgage. So brokers submitted the deal, got the deal offered, reviewed that rate, got them a lower rate. And then I think it was like 48 hours or 72 hours before this deal was due to complete, a different lender reduced the rates. I think they were probably red. And then the customers completed on this remo and then complained to the network. Basically, so he said, oh, well, why didn't I get this deal? And he was like, well, it wasn't even available at the point of application. It was only available 72 hours before you were due to complete. There was no way of switching you to it because, one, it was a different lender, so it would be a separate application. And two, it would mean that you'd be on SVR at least for a month, and the cost of SVR would offset the
negate any benefit.
Negate the benefit of doing that. But this person has still made a complaint against this broker. And now, of course, it's going to get thrown out. There's no choice about it. But someone raised a good point in terms of, in suitability letters, making sure that you're saying, look, you have to be happy with what we apply for originally, because that's what I'm advising on. And it's at the point that we, you know, apply. That's when the advice is given. If rates improve and if we manage to get you a better deal, great, but don't expect it and just be happy with what you've got at the moment. And made a good point. And so I've got a colleague where they wanted a lower rate with the same lender. The broker went to renew that rate. And then, of course, they rescored them. Nothing had changed in the credit profile. Nothing had changed in the credit profile, but it rescored and then declined and they were on offer. And this was...
What happened?
Well, so it's now on appeal, but of course it's a big boy lender where it's, if you failed score and there's no appealing for the score. So that was on the basis of trying to seek out this lower rate. And now, of course, they're all in the world, they're in a bit of a world of pain, these customers. And to be fair to the broker, he did say to them, look, when we do this, they will rescore you. If for some reason it doesn't fail, if it doesn't fail score, this will revoke your offer. And then you'll, no, we'll do it, as of course people do. because it's that whole thing, you know, sometimes when people won't listen, they have to feel that's what's happened.
But in the majority of cases, that probably would have gone through and wouldn't have been an issue. But now that if you've got that on your table and the clients, yeah, I wouldn't want that headache on my table.
Yeah.
Do you remember the guys, the issue that we had when rates were climbing and climbing and how we had that desperate situation? In some ways, it is very nice to be in a situation where you can go back and deliver the news to your client that you can potentially save the money that they could use for their protection budget, money that they could be using for a whole host of other things. My concern also is with regards to, as I keep on saying, in the next 6 to 18 months, I'm expecting the market to really pick up again and the number of applications to massively increase. Do you think lenders are ready for a marked increase in mortgage business? Do you think they can still offer the same levels of service that they would like to and that some of them have been? Or with working from home, a very contentious topic still, do you think that a lot of these guys are going to struggle if we do see a big uptake in mortgage business? Jamie, what do you think in Norwich?
Well, I think everyone's favourite lender, won't name names, but everyone will know who it is, they will just be doing the same week in, week out. Absolutely delightful, and it will be no different. I can hear Lewis typing. It's well
bloody
loud.
I thought that was something
so loud
or something.
Jamie,
yeah, before you continue, on TikTok you see those developers with those two halves of the keyboard which they have on their hands and they're like typing away and everything. Have you got that keyboard, Jamie?
Oh, man, I don't know. I've got quite a nice little sleek one. Should we bring it up? There we go, that's my one.
Wow. Is that Logitech MX?
No, this is a proper Microsoft posh one that goes with my studio laptop. So check me out with your all matching.
You've got to watch those videos. It's like the keyboard and he's got one on this side and one on this side. And he's like typing without looking at them. And whenever I look at him, I think of you being Mr. IT and Mr. Technology. Sorry, continue.
So, yeah, I think the big boys will probably be fine. I think some of the ones that have gone adrift in recent years, I think they'll still struggle because you've still got some lenders, despite not a mega busy market, have still got 3, 5, 6 days on service levels. And you think it's quiet. So how are you going to struggle when it ramps up? And everyone, the whole working from home is always going to divide people. Some people, you should trust people. Some people won't. But realistic, the small business, I think it can work because you can build out a team of people that you truly can trust. And there's a bit more, you know, loyalty potentially within it. But when you become a large organization, they can't monitor it. And ultimately, the loyalty isn't really probably to that firm because they can go work for any big firm at the end of the day. So I think there is an element of the work from home in big lenders and underwriters and call handlers. But the queues are longer because, you know, I'll just have an extra, I'll put the washing out quickly between the call or whatever. And so it does have a knock-on effect. But it's whether they can recruit people to do the job is probably going to be the other issue. You know, with probably the wages they want to pay versus, you know, the actual living wage now as well, you could probably do a lot less stressful jobs and people not getting on your case on the phone, and probably the same kind of money. So would people want to be in that kind of industry? I'm not sure. So it'd be tricky to see for sure.
Shall we have some interesting facts about Norwich and Norfolk?
Please.
Go on, hear us.
So interesting facts about Norfolk. It's the largest seal colony in England with about 2,500 pups each winter.
Big up Blakeney.
Blakeney Port, yeah. It's got 659 churches, which is the highest concentration of religious centres in the world.
I've got one for you before you jump on. Norwich used to have, in the city centre, 52 churches, one for every weekend of the year, and 365 pubs, one for every day of the week.
Perfect.
Medieval times, but a lot of them are gone now. But that's a little fact for you.
So Norwich was also the first to be pedestrianised. First ever pedestrianised street back in July 67. And of course, Alan Partridge talks about the pedestrianisation of Norwich city centre in his TV show.
As our listeners switch off in record numbers, can we get back to the mortgage market, please?
I'm just going to hold up my pen again. These pens have got rose gold clips, and they're available from pens.com. And, you know, if pens.com want to sponsor us, then that's probably a good idea. They have a touch-free stylus, so you can use it on your phone, and they write it very nicely. So there, pens.com. See if we get a sponsorship. Tag them in. Look at Riz, he's so upset now. Let's talk about inflation.
Let's talk about growing your business. And going back to this point with regards to working from home, if you are trying to take on a new member of staff, I don't think there's any hope in hell that their knowledge and their expertise is going to increase if they're working from home and you're trying to teach them how everything is. If you are sitting in an office, and I know we're all trying to cut costs and everything like that, but if you are sitting in an office and you hear somebody more experienced, more knowledgeable than you, just doing their day job, you will learn. And if I go back to my whole career trajectory from when I started working in banks, that's how you learn. You learn by doing, and you learn by watching more experienced people. Both of you run your own businesses. Have either of you got any plans to A, grow your team, or B, find more innovative ways to improve your own efficiencies?
James.
I'll go first. So, mortgage business, there is me, Meg, and Holly. So, two brokers, one admin, and obviously my marketing team, or my marketing business, has got Emily and Meg. So, Meg splits her time across the two. So, for me, it's a case of mortgages. Where am I going to grow it from here? I want to probably get to the business to a team between 3 to 5 advisors. I probably don't want it to go much bigger than that. I think you'll lose the community of the business. And it's hard to control the quality of advice you've then probably got from there as well, to have the same ethos, doing the right thing for the customer and being on your agenda rather than their own agenda as well. So I don't want to go super big with it. I'd rather have a team of fewer advisors, but more admin that can do the mundane tasks on there as well. Because as horrible as it sounds, if they decide to move on, it's probably far easier to replace an admin than it is a quality broker, as I found out myself when I was trying to find a broker. So I think for me, a hybrid team of good quality advisors, strong admin team that can be a higher volume of them, I think that'll be the long-term plan. For me, it's a case of Meg's on mat leave at the moment in time. So once she's back and fully operational in February, we're back into growth time. It's a case of them taking more tasks on, freeing me up more time to then go and deliver, getting more business in through the doors, so then we get more staff in.
So what's your strategy for growing your team? Will it be to train up your own advisors? Will it be to contact other people who are maybe operating independently, and the benefits of them coming under you and the support services that you can offer from admin or marketing? And those people that you do take on board, are you thinking of having them working under self-employed contracts, employed contracts?
Yeah, so I could probably speak quite freshly on this because I've had a bad recruiting experience, any names, but took an advisor on, self-employed contract, had a couple of years of industry experience, but the work ethic, the knowledge was probably far worse than I ever expected on there as well. So, you know, unfortunately, we had to part ways with that. And that's hard. As a human in you don't want to give up on someone, but as a business owner, it is a decision sometimes you need to make. And I down a self-employed route, and I was adamant, look how Riz looks sick with them glasses on, but I was adamant I probably wanted to go down the self-employed route for so long, just keep the cost down, deliver on the business. Whereas actually I've gone down the employed route this time around with Holly, you know, managed to put a package together that suits her and requirements and her hours that she needs to work around her daughter. And that works really well. And my God, she's so hardworking, comes in, does the job. Don't get me wrong, she's not going to be someone that then goes to stay till 5 o'clock every day or stays a little bit late to get something done, but she works every second of that day for her pay. So I think for me, I'm more engaged of actually employing people now. Probably, as horrible as it sounds, more control of what's going on. You can get probably a greater caliber of candidate because more people do want that security. Whereas I feel like the self-employed route, you'll just be attracting the broker that's done the rounds through most brokerages, just trying to squeeze out an extra 1 or 2% on their cut versus what they had on from the last firm as well. So for me, employed's the route to go down going forward.
Lewis, apart from Holly's email address, what are your plans? What else do you want? Sorry,
I'm hoping that over the next kind of 6 months, I've fingers crossed got a chap potentially joining me that's kind of decided to take a bit of a career change. So that's one. So I don't mind whether it be employed or self-employed. It's more about the person, to be honest. And again, with Jamie, we've all had those kind of experiences. So I think it is about the right person. And that doesn't mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be the finished article by any stretch of the imagination. But it's the outlook and the attitude that they bring to the table that I would be interested in now. Because all the other kind of stuff you can teach, you can help, you can coach, you can guide. But if they're just not the right kind of vibe, there's not much you can do about that. And that's not a criticism of anyone that isn't the right vibe, because not every job's for every person, is it? So it's more about the person. But in terms of where I want to go, I mean, I'd say the same as Jamie. I'd rather be busier and have someone help me with a bit of admin than more brokers, because I think you introduce more risk. Now, of course, there are businesses out there with multiple brokers, but that seems to me to be sometimes a lot of work for a lot of risk without a huge deal of reward. Unless you kind of wanted to sell your business, and then that's a different kettle of fish. But, so I'd rather be busier and more efficient than a bigger team of brokers. Personally, that's just a personal thing.
It is very possible to be in a situation where you expand your operation and all that ends up doing is not only do you end up seeing the reward last, but your reward is minimized because you're making sure everyone else is getting fed ultimately before you. And I think that's the concern about growing a team and, making sure that you don't lose sight of the key components. But I'm very optimistic about this market, and I just want to make sure that, considering the last few years that we've all had, when the good times do return, we're obviously already in a position to capitalize upon that and to make hay while the sun shines.
But also, don't forget, I'm sorry, there's also the whole thing of I bet of the brokers that do listen to this podcast, I bet we're all, because we've all been guilty of it, us three. I bet if you look back over the last 3 months of business written, there are cases there where there's been an income and an opportunity missed. So start with, I would always start with patching the holes in the bucket before you start trying to put more water in.
And I think this is very, look, we're obviously all members of different chats and everybody's talking about lead generation and obviously driving in new business. But I do agree with you, Lewis, in a lot of cases, if you just revisit the back book that you've got of clients, especially if you've been trading for a long period of time and just re-engage with those people who've already consumed your services before, there are a lot of opportunities and other ways that you can help them. So yeah, Lewis, I think you've got a very valid point. In the last few minutes of this podcast, Jamie, we're just going to come over to you in Technology Corner for you to share your latest technology hack, please, with our listeners who are interested in improving efficiencies or growing their business in 2024. Jamie, over to you.
Wow, cheers for this. I thought we'd replace Technology Corner with Shaw's something else. Right, tech, cool, put me on the spot here. So what have I done? Implemented is automated text updates to clients.
Oh
yeah, you like that one.
Oh,
you like that one, don't you? With my CRM, I have, again, CRM is Pipedrive for if anyone asks. I then use Zapier, which allows two pieces of software to communicate with each other. And also for the benefit of Lewis, who's also asked that question before. And then I use a system called Twilio, which allows you to buy a mobile number. You can brand it as your name, company name on there as well. And when I move my case to certain stages of the pipeline that it's in, so if I move a case from application submitted to mortgage offer issued, it will send them a text message to say, your mortgage offer's been issued. An email will follow shortly after to have a copy of your offer and your next steps. Please make sure you read this. So it drives them when they need to look on there as well. Again, I've got then further automations of that 7 o'clock in the evening, when everyone's sat down, kids are hopefully in bed, it then fires out another text message to the client. Thank you for using a service. Please leave us a review. on this site. And then I've built my own. And then on top of that, I've even built my own review builder, which can filter out if, you know, not that it's ever happened, but it could filter out any bad reviews before it hits Google or Trustpilot and it becomes an internal feedback form. And if they're happy to give a higher review, it'll then allow them to leave it on either Google or Trustpilot as well. So that is my latest bit of tech. And you can probably do it at any point in the stage. You could do it at when you hit application submitted, it fires a text message. Your application has been submitted. We'll be in touch when we have an update. Your mortgage is completed. Bang, you can then set another update. Or you can even do like follow-up reminders like 1 month after completion, refer a friend, or 1 month after they moved in, we haven't discussed sorted insurance for yourself. Should we book in a chat around protection? You know, all that kind of stuff you can do with it. So it's just follow-up.
What type of cost are you looking at for this follow-up communication system?
Yeah, so Twilio doesn't cost anything to get. You buy like a mobile number for like £1.15. So it's pittance to get a mobile number on there. And I think it's the same as like what a normal text message would cost. So you're like 10, 12p to send a text message out. So we're not talking big numbers, obviously, unless you're doing big numbers of mortgages. But in the scheme of things, if you pick up an extra couple of reviews for you know, 20, 30p or whatever, or pick up an extra appointment, it soon pays for itself at the end of the day as well. So my next one will be is moving that from text message to WhatsApp will be my next one. But that's a little bit more involved, changing that and getting that one set up instead.
Lewis, are you aware of all of these modern methods that Jamie is talking about?
No, I didn't know what the text message was just until
then. Yeah. You just use cup and string, don't you?
Yeah. Basically, I've got a big horn. I go outside and blow it, you know, and scream through that, you know, your mortgage offer's issued, and just hope that a pigeon picks that up and, you know, takes it. It's like basically magic. To be fair, I'd be interested to, because Zapier does integrate with Acre. You can integrate, so Acre has got its own kind of hidden
API.
Yeah, API thing. So it'd be good to kind of figure out that. I'll probably have to get Jamie involved somewhere.
Jamie knows what he's going to be doing between Christmas and New Year.
but no, because it'd be quite good actually. But because the way that Pipedrive's set up in terms of, it's like on the, I can't remember the Kanban view, isn't it? So Acre's set up like that, and you kind of move it across from, you know, pre-submitted to submitted to Val offer, etc. So I'm guessing you could kind of set up a trigger for that, couldn't you, with the Twilio thing and with Zapier in
same principle.
Yeah, it's the same kind of thing, isn't it? But be good to do that, because it'd be nice to be able to improve that communication, because at the moment I basically do it manually. It would be nice to be able to know that that's kind of gone, and just to keep people a bit more updated. Because do you know what? I'm sure you're the same. I mean, I've been doing this job now a little over a decade, and on my own as just over 5 years. And it's always, it's not actually about the advice and all that. It's about managing expectations and communication, isn't it? Let's be honest. That's what the job is. People panic when they don't know what they're doing and they don't know what's happening. And that's one of the most vital aspects. And it's weird. I can remember listening to a guy talking about, it's about doctors, about kind of communication and managed expectations, where in terms of doctors that got negative feedback for their kind of how a patient felt they'd been treated. And it was more about the bedside manner than about what they did. So it's weird how kind of human psychology is, we can hijack it in a sense, because it was like, well, you've got the best surgeon in the world doing this work, but he's a little bit grumpy and all the rest of it. But actually, he's a really, really great surgeon. He's done whatever operation he needs to do, and you're going to be fit and healthy again. And, you know, he's pulled it off and he's cracking. But his bedside manner was left a little bit to be kind of desired, versus someone who's got really, really kind of really jovial, really outgoing, great bedside manner, but maybe not quite as good a doctor, or maybe made a mistake with something, but nothing kind of life-changing. People were more bothered about the managing expectations of the bedside manner than they were about the actual quality of the medical care they were receiving. It's probably the same with our job.
100%. I completely agree with that. You could be the best broker in the world. There's two elements of force. I'll expand on that. It will be how you deal with the clients, but how do you attract them clients in the first place? You know, they're the two key skills to have, is marketing yourself as a person and then excelling once they do become a client. Knowledge can be learned. You've got all the software under the sun to find criteria out. And if you say you can, you know, I'll look at doing it, you go away and work for it. But, you know, work ethic and updating clients and then marketing yourself are the two biggest skills to have in this job.
I think that's really important for when you're looking at someone to recruit them in and everything. Some people are so focused on experience. Sometimes experience can be bad learnt experience, but work ethic, determination, integrity, how you can communicate with people, how they relate to you, how good you are at communicating. These are skills that, you know, come before anything about knowledge and about rates and everything like that. For God's sake, rates change on a daily basis. We pay for expensive software that tells us what we can and what we can't do and who's doing what and everything like that. So, yeah, I fully agree with you there. I fully agree with you there. Well, let's take that as putting a pin in this episode just of the Broker
Collective. Just before we go. Look, he's so angry today. He's so angry. So I was thought we could finish off with a little kind of with psychology corner for business owners. There's a great quote that my cousin told me earlier from a business owner, and it was be where your feet are, not where your head is. So when you're not at work, you know, so you might be in the pub with your mates, you might be at the football match, you might be walking, you know, taking your kids to school, whatever, you know. Be present in the moment rather than constantly worrying about work the next day and all the rest of it. So basically, when you're not at work, try and forget about it. So be where your feet are, not where your head is.
Pardon?
Be where your feet are, not where your head is. I quite like that in terms of trying to be present in the moment rather than... Because to be fair, with everything that's gone off, let's be honest, when the mini-budget first happened, how many of us kind of sat thinking, oh my God, what's going to happen now? And everything he did, you went out for a meal, you went out for a walk, you went out, you know, to a party. It clouded pretty much everyone's, it coloured everything, didn't it? You could never really turn off from it.
We can't control it. We can just ride it.
Deep. It's got deep for a Friday.
It's got too deep for a Friday. Thank you very much for joining us. Please smash a like or subscribe onto anywhere you're listening to this masterpiece. Everyone who's got feedback or if you want to make changes or if you think there's things that we can do better, please contact Lewis Shaw on LinkedIn. Good luck to you guys. Have a safe week and we shall see you all next week. Take care.
See you later, chaps. Bye-bye.